This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Get back to the NBA draft. Plus, a little more Arch Manning talk. Best storylines of the upcoming college football season. And a whole lot more here over the final hour of the week. Hey, if you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. Or also through our free app, search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And through the app, you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. You can always get in touch with the show, charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. Leave a comment for the show there. On Twitter, at Morrow Middays. And also, on the text line, 843-608-1734. Or you can give us a call to join the conversation on the phones. 843-721-9500. Hey, last reminder before it's too late. Monday is the new week for our 2022 Summer Golf Tour. The latest round of foursomes will go on sale Monday morning, 8 a.m. Get yourself a foursome for just $98.9, and they'll go on sale at 8 a.m. on Monday for the Rivertown Country Club. It's week 6 out of 10 for our Summer Golf Tour coming up Monday after the weekend, 8 a.m. So set your alarm, put it in the calendar, be ready to go. Monday morning, 8 a.m., and get yourself a foursome for $98.9. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com to get your foursome starting Monday at 8 a.m. Your last warning before it becomes too late come Monday. These foursomes sell out in the matter of minutes, so be ready to go right away at 8 on Monday, charlestonsportsradio.com, as our 2022 Summer Golf Tour continues. The NBA draft, of course, occurred last night. Takeaways from the NBA draft. You know, a lot of times we come in after the college football season, I give you winners and I give you losers. It's a little bit harder with the NBA draft because, well, just like the NFL draft, you got to give it a little time, you got to wait and see. But let's get into a little winners, losers, and break down what happened last night in the NBA draft as well. And also, we'll discuss a little Paolo Banchero. But a few winners and losers last night from the draft.
Here's what I want you to look at. There are winners.
You're all winners.
There are losers.
Well, I guess I'm a loser. A loser.
And there are people who have not discovered how to win.
Winners and losers from last night. We're going to combine this all kind of into one. I thought the top five picks all were kind of good fits. Like, I don't know if they're going to work out, right? But the Magic got, I thought, the best player in the draft. Oklahoma City, I have a lot of questions about Chet Holmgren, but if there's any team to take a swing on him, it should be Oklahoma with all of their draft picks. Jabari Smith fits well in Houston. I think Jaden Ivey fits really well in Detroit, and Keegan Murray could be a good fit in Sacramento, even if maybe he's not as good as Ivey. But in terms of a couple specific winners or losers, you could say that the fifth pick, Jaden Ivey, was a big winner last night because he got exactly what he wanted. You could tell me the Pistons were a big winner because Ivey became available at number five. But I would say Ivy's the big winner. We touched on this last hour, but he made it clear he did not want to go to Sacramento. Everybody thought he'd be the number four pick. He wanted to stay closer to home in the Midwest, and he's doing so with Detroit. And he said afterwards that it was a dream come true to be able to play in that region, that area. So he got exactly what he wanted. Now, we know in the NBA, right, we'll see how the Kyrie Irving situation plays out, but these guys typically get whatever they want, these stars. Now, a little bit of that happened here with Jaden Ivey before he even got into the league, coming out of college, entering the draft. Now, I don't know if that played a big role in Sacramento's decision, but if you read between the lines, it seems like it had something to do with it. A lot of people were very surprised. This was one of the biggest, maybe the biggest surprise in the draft, that Sacramento went with Keegan Murray over Jaden Ivey at number four. And maybe at least part of it was because Ivey made it clear before that I don't want to go all the way out there and play for Sacramento. That's why the Kings have always struggled to get free agents. People don't want to go out to Sacramento. There's nothing out there. And for Ivey, he wanted to be closer to home. So Jaden Ivey got exactly what he wanted. Drafted fifth, goes to Detroit. Good fit for him there. Stays close to home. Yeah, the Pistons were seemingly on paper seemed to be a winner because he was still available at five. But I think Ivy's the bigger winner because he got exactly what he wanted, and he did it, you know, as a recruit, as a prospect, coming out of college before even stepping into the NBA. I think another winner is college basketball in all of this. There's the options nowadays to go the college route still or to go try to play professionally. Go to the G League and try to get money right away. Go play overseas. Well, last night, Jaden Hardy was the number two recruit in his class a year ago. He decided to go that G League route to go get money this past year, play for, what do they call it, Ignite? Team Ignite, something like that, G League Ignite. So Jaden Hardy went that route. He was the number two recruit. Could have went to college, could have went to really whatever college he wanted to. Instead, went the G League route. You know where he was drafted last night? Not in the first round. He dropped all the way to the second round. Meanwhile, you look at Duke, they had four guys drafted. Three of the first 15 picks. Zion Williamson made the argument at the time he was as big of a deal by the draft as he was because he went to Duke. I think college basketball, even if it's just 1 year, we'll get back to that in a moment, I think college basketball is still the way to go. Now, there's different circumstances because of family issues. Maybe you need to go start making money right now. You can't wait a year. Right, your mother's sick, whatever the situation may be. Father got laid off, whatever it is, come from a tough background. You need money now. I get it. But for these guys that have options that could afford to wait, especially now at name, image, and likeness, you could get paid at the college game anyways. But for those that could wait a year before they truly turn pro, I still think college basketball is the best option. And Jaden Hardy is another example that these college basketball coaches can try to use. Number two recruit coming out of high school a year later, and he's getting drafted. Yeah, he got drafted, but in the second round. Meanwhile, you look at Paolo Banchero, went number one last night after playing at Duke. Chet Holmgren, all right, number two after playing at Gonzaga. So on and so far. Jabari Smith, one and done. And number three pick last night after playing in the SEC. I still think the better route is going to college basketball, even if it's for just a year. Another winner would be Jalen Brunson, but that turns the Knicks into a loser. Jalen Brunson looks like he's set for a big payday this offseason one way or another. The Knicks, I thought, were the biggest loser of last night's draft, or maybe more so Knicks fans. And I'm from a family of Knicks fans. The Knicks were acting like the Oklahoma City Thunder last night, pulling off all sorts of different trades to stockpile draft picks. Now, if you're Oklahoma City, you have to do that. They have more draft picks than teams in the NBA the next couple of years. That's why they could take a swing on a Chet Holmgren last night, because they had so many picks in last night's draft and future drafts. And they have to try to stockpile draft picks because you never get a star going to Oklahoma City. I've never been to Oklahoma City, but it seems like NBA players don't want to go there. And you saw Durant, Harden, Russell Westbrook all left. So they feel we got to get our stars through the draft. Well, the Knicks apparently did the same thing. The Knicks didn't make a single choice last night, single selection. They made like nine different trades just to get draft picks. And I think it has more to do with the reputation of the Knicks. We always talk about when guys become free agents, oh, they're going to want to go play in New York. And yet the Knicks never get a big-time free agent. They never have. Going back 30 years, they rarely do. At least 20-plus years. But it's us as the fans or media members, we perpetrate this misconception of, yeah, everybody wants to play in New York. No, they don't want to play for the Knicks. They like going there and playing at Madison Square Garden. Any basketball guy, any basketball junkie can acknowledge that it's the Mecca, MSG. But it doesn't mean they actually want to be part of the Knicks organization. They're like playing there as a visitor. They don't want to be part of James Dolan's operation. But the way the Knicks operated, a lot like Oklahoma City, where they were trying to stockpile draft picks because they feel that's the best way to build. They're also trying to clear cap space, not for a Kyrie Irving, not for a Kevin Durant, but it seems like their big fish is Jalen Brunson. And if that's the best you can do, that's troubling for the Knicks as well. If you're trying to sell me, and again, my family, we're Knicks fans. I jumped on the Magic bandwagon, so I kind of have two NBA teams. I'm breaking the rules. But if you're trying to sell a Knick fan on the fact that, hey, we're going to build through the draft and with Jalen Brunson, right? It's like the Yankees saying the same thing. It's like the Yankees trying to be like the Tampa Bay Rays. Like, what are you talking about? You're the New York Yankees. You go out and you sign an Aaron Judge. You give him his contract. You go out and you get that big star. Jalen Brunson's the best you can do, and you want us to try to wait through the draft? They're operating like the Oklahoma City Thunder. So Jalen Brunson's going to get a big payday, and the Knicks hope he's going to choose them. But if that's the best you could do, that's troubling. And I'll also say this. The other reason why the Knicks were the big losers is because not only Jalen Brunson's their big prize, but how desperate they are. They hired his father to be a coach. We see this a lot in the college game, where they'll hire a family member to get the kid to come to school. In fact, you may remember when Keenan Allen was being recruited, and he wanted his it was like his stepbrother, half-brother, was a quarterback, and it was like a joint package. And Nick Saban said, yeah, no thanks. We don't need you that bad. We're not going to take your brother at quarterback. So Keenan Allen didn't go play for Saban. He wound up in the Pac-12, if I remember correctly. But we see this a lot, where people will hire family members to get that kid. They did it back in the 80s with Danny Manning, hired his father on the coaching staff, and he went to Kansas. But now the Knicks, an NBA team's doing this, where, granted, Rick Brunson played in the league, played for the Knicks. He did coach in the league, but he's been out of the league. He hasn't been coaching for the last 4 years. They just hired him this offseason, coincidentally, when his son's about to become a free agent. These moves by the Knicks just seem so desperate to me. They're acting like they're the Oklahoma City Thunder, trying to stockpile draft picks, hiring Rick Brunson just so his son will hopefully choose to come play. We're not talking about LeBron or Durant here. We're talking about Jalen Brunson, who most people didn't even know before this postseason. I think the Knicks were the biggest loser last night. We'll see who else, right? The Magic choosing Banchero over Jabari Smith. I like the move. I think it could turn them into a winner in this conversation. But a few years from now, maybe we'll say, yep, that was a losing choice. The Kings taking Keegan Murray over Jaden Ivey. I don't hate it as much as most people do. But again, a few years from now, we may look back and say, yep, the Kings were the big losers in that draft. Once again, right? They had a chance to get a star, and they didn't take him. But I think the college basketball game really benefited from last night. I thought the Knicks embarrassed themselves, and I thought also Jaden Ivey showed the power of the player even before they get into the NBA, where it seems like he kind of dictated where he went in the draft, let alone once they're in the league, and guys like Kyrie Irving choose where they go play for, you know, next, even when they're under contract. What's interesting about the draft is, you know, in the NBA draft, we don't know. We're talking about 19-year-olds. They're still got to look at Chet Holmgren. He's a project. You got to give him a few years. In the NFL, people can come in. These players can come into the NFL and have an immediate impact in the NFL right away. A guy could help lead you to the Super Bowl in their first year, like Ja'Marr Chase. A quarterback can turn around your team in their very first week in the NFL. It's not really the case in the NBA. You got to be a little more patient. But, you know, we talk about trying to duplicate the Warriors. That it's no longer about super teams. You should try to build through the draft and develop your players, which the Warriors did. The other thing the Warriors did, though, was not only that, but the guys that they drafted also spent a lot of time in college basketball. They weren't one and dones, right? Klay Thompson spent 3 years in college. Steph Curry spent 3. Draymond Green, 4. Even Jordan Poole, their newer star, spent 2 years playing college basketball before the Warriors drafted him. I went back and I looked at the last 15 years, and I excluded last year because it's too soon. But if you go back last 15 years, we have had 89 one-and-done players drafted in the lottery, which is the top 14. And of those 89 players, only 14 have become All-Stars. That's essentially one a year. So you look at all these one-and-dones getting drafted in the first 14 picks. History tells us only one of those guys will ever make an All-Star team. Not a great rate. Because, for example, last night, of those first 14 picks, 6 of them were one-and-done. The top 3 picks last night were one-and-done players. History tells us, yeah, only one of those guys is actually going to be an All-Star. Out of Banchero and Holmgren, right, and Jabari Smith, and then a few others that went later on, like Shaedon Sharpe, who's a big wild card at number 7, only one of those guys, history tells us, suggests only one's actually going to make an All-Star team. Not great. Just an All-Star game. Once in their career, only one guy will do it. The numbers have gotten even worse in recent years, where fewer one-and-dones are making All-Star games in the last 5 years compared to the previous decade. The number one pick last 13 years have all been one-and-done players. Was the case again last night with Banchero. But history kind of shows the hit rate on those guys are very low. They're 19-year-olds, 1 year removed from high school. They're not physically or mentally fully developed yet. They're coming into the NBA and going up against grown men. You put the whole team on their back. They're the number one pick in the draft. There's a lot of pressure. They're only 19. They don't know how to handle it yet. And you expect them to be the star from day one. Then you look at the Golden State Warriors, right? Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Jordan Poole. They all spent a couple of years in college. John Morant's the best player in that draft. He wasn't one and done. Donovan Mitchell, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, Paul George, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Russell Westbrook. Right, all guys that played multiple years in college. I think there's a real benefit to that. There's a reason why in football they make you wait 3 years before you come to the NFL. Part of it, of course, is how physical the sport is. You can't take a 19-year-old and throw him out there and go against Ray Lewis. They'd get killed. But in basketball, the sport has become very physical in recent years. It's become very athletic. Right, it's more athletic now than basketball has ever been. And you're taking these guys 1 year removed from high school. Not a ton of experience. They just went from playing 20 high school games to now, okay, maybe 32 college games to the next year, 82 NBA games. Right, it's a big leap. They've never done it. 2 years ago, they were playing 25 games a year in high school. Now they're playing 82 in the NBA, you know, 18 months later. And, by the way, you're throwing millions of dollars at them and putting the team on their back and saying, go carry us to stardom. They're 19 years old. So last night, you look at the top five, the first three picks were all one and dones. And I really do like Paolo Banchero. I don't have high hopes for Chet Holmgren, and I think Jabari Smith could be a good player in the NBA as well. But then you get to pick number four, Keegan Murray. Pick number five, Jaden Ivey. They spent multiple years in college. Keegan Murray is 22. He's just the second player to go in the top five in the last decade who is that old. Usually we don't get guys like this. He was also number one in the offensive rating in college basketball this past year. Jaden Ivey also was pretty impressive this past year, spent multiple years in college. I like Banchero, number one overall. But maybe we do look back, and maybe the Kings actually did nail this. Maybe they did get a pretty good player. And maybe we look back and see Keegan Murray and Jaden Ivey as two of the better players in this draft. Guys who spent a little more time to get a little more polished in the college game before coming to the NBA, as opposed to a Banchero and Holmgren and Jabari Smith. Hey, I gave you a couple of winners and losers. Don't think that I did not notice another big winner in all this. Myself. Us Italians. For the first time since 2006, an Italian player went number one in the NBA draft. So I have my Italia shirt on today.
Feels good to be back on top, huh, Luke? Doesn't it?
That's right. Best player in all the land, Paolo Banchero. Now, he's half Italian. His father's Italian. And but he classifies himself as Italian. He's part of the Italian national team. And in his on his little Twitter profile, he's got the Italian flag next to his name. So I'm all in on Paolo Banchero going to the – I grew up rooting for the Magic, and here he comes. First Italian drafted number one. The only other one I think ever was Bargnani in 2006, and he was a bust. So Banchero, you got a lot of pressure to try to make up for Bargnani 16 years ago. There have not been a lot of great Italian NBA players over the years.
No, I was just thinking the first name that pops in my mind is Gallinari. He's, I'm sure, part Italian with that last name. Don't want to obviously put any labels on anybody. Gallinari's one. I can't really think of any others, quite honestly.
I know. Manu Ginobili is from Argentina, but he's like part Italian.
Oh, okay.
And he lived and he played in Italy for a while as well. And I think his parents were Italian and then moved to Argentina, I think is the story. Or one of his parents. So I think he's part Italian. He's like the only guy, though.
He danced with the boot. His family danced with the boot a little bit.
So him and now Banchero. I mean, before Banchero even steps into the league, he's probably like the second best Italian player in NBA history. So there you go. You know, part of the reason is Italians, and I'm Italian, so it's not like I'm putting down a certain population of people. They're not really typically tall people. So that doesn't fare well for the NBA. Or just for basketball in general.
So I go wear the skinny clothes.
Yeah, as you were explaining earlier this week. It's usually not a lot. You don't get a lot of height. So, you know. And, of course, soccer is so big over there. That's why my father is Italian, played professional basketball. And he was tall. He was a forward or a center. But when he goes over to Italy, it's like such a, like, whoa, look at this. It's like a novelty act. He's walking around the streets. So much bigger than Italians, they're not really big people. So, you know, Paolo Banchero's 6'10, and Ginobili wasn't that big if he's part Italian. Bargnani was like 7 foot, but I think that's a big reason why. He's just not producing a lot of height over there. I don't know where the height came from in my family, but everyone Everyone's big. My aunt's like 6 foot, right? And they got a lot of size. I don't know where it came from, but that's the outlier. So anyways, Banchero, congratulations, number one pick. I'm all over the Banchero bandwagon, and I hope he has a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, Jersey's coming in no less than 2 months, folks. Than 2 months.
Well, it's the perfect connection because, as I said, I grew up rooting for the Magic. And so he's on the Magic. I know he comes from Duke. That's the one negative. But I saw him play in person this past year. He goes to the Magic, number one pick. Got that Italian background. Love Banchero. That's my guy right now. So congratulations to him and the Magic. I think the Magic taking him number one was the smart choice. Therefore, you could say he's a winner for being the number one pick, as he should have been. And the Magic, maybe for making the right choice. We'll see years from now. But I think last night they made the right decision going, I think Banchero's the safest pick, and I think he's the best player in this draft. And that's not just because he has an Italian background. I think he's that talented. But we'll see how things progress now moving forward after the draft last night. Hey, when we come back, best storylines of the upcoming college football season. I'll give you my top storylines next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
With all my favorite colors.
Yes, sir.
All my favorite colors. My sisters and my brothers see them like no other. All my favorite colors. It's a good day to be, a good day for me. A good day to see my favorite colors. Colors. My sisters and my brothers.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, the best storylines heading into the college football season. We'll get to that. Let's talk about the NBA draft last segment. In regards to the Hornets and the Hawks, I do like their moves as well for the first round. I thought they both addressed some needs. See, that's the thing with the NBA, that it differs from the NFL. We can break down and analyze the NFL draft a whole lot more because there are so many positions and needs for teams. NBA, it's become positionless basketball. So it's not like, oh, but they needed a point guard, but they got a small forward. That's not really the case anymore. Guys are playing all positions. Chet Holmgren is going to play down low defensively. He'll play out in the perimeter offensively. Like, he does a little bit of everything. Paolo Banchero, right? He's 6'10", but he's not going to be banging around inside a whole lot. So it's positionless basketball. So it's, so instead there's a little drama because we don't know how these guys are going to turn out. And most of the decisions by these teams, it's not like, wow, they really screwed up. They didn't fill a need. Well, these guys all kind of fill all needs for the most part if they're talented enough. But I do like the fit for the top five picks, as I said. I know a lot of people are ripping the Kings. I kind of get it with Keegan Murray, and Jaden Ivey's a good fit in Detroit. And then with the Hornets, I like their decision. They need size. They need a center. They got an athletic one in Mark Williams, who's exactly the guy I wanted them to take. And then the very next pick, his teammate A.J. Griffin went to the Hawks, and I think he has some good upside, and he's he can shoot it. And I think Trae Young should be surrounded with some shooters because of his penetrating abilities and the ability to then kick out to the open guy with a defense collapse. So we'll see how things work out, but I like the thought process for the Hornets, the Hawks, and really all the teams in the top five. We were talking about Arch Manning earlier this afternoon. You could go find it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. He made the decision to go to Texas yesterday. And we'll see how things play out. And I don't want to look too far in the future, but I voiced my concern earlier. And it's why if I was Arch, Texas would have been third on my list. Because by the time they joined the SEC in his third year at Texas, right, that's going to be a big year for his NFL future. And I would be concerned about going into the SEC with that Big 12 roster at the time. We played the clip from Pete Thamel earlier, but he brought up a good point that last year, I don't know, Arch Manning will make a difference. They'll continue to recruit some talent. But they lost by 20 points to Arkansas, which is not even the top team in the SEC. Like, there's still a long way to go. They're going to get blown out this year by Alabama. There's still a long way to go between Texas and the SEC. And so then Arch Manning's going to go rolling in there 2025. His third year at Texas will be draft eligible after that season. And we've seen teams, when they first joined the SEC, struggle. The only team that had immediate success was A&M because they had Johnny Manziel, who was running all over the place. And I don't think that's Arch Manning's game. My concern will be that Texas will be at a real disadvantage, especially in the trenches, joining the SEC. And by the time we're talking Arch Manning to the NFL, right, that could be bad timing for him and his draft stock. Sure, that's 3 years down the road. A lot can change until then, but that's my concern. With the idea of going to Texas and then being there when they join the SEC in a crucial year for Arch's future. When it comes to college football, what are some of the biggest storylines for the upcoming season? We're about, 70 days away from the opener. He'll be here before you know it. Top five biggest storylines for college football this year. Number five, I go Spencer Rattler. And I think it's fascinating. We all like a bounce-back story. Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma was the number one quarterback at one time. We thought he'd be the number one pick. We thought he'd be the Heisman winner. He gets benched mid-season. Then he has to leave the program. Now he's at South Carolina. And if you want to compare Oklahoma and South Carolina, right, that's a pretty big drop-off. But he's with an old coach. And the Gamecocks, are hopeful of what they can accomplish this year. And Spencer Rattler obviously wants to turn himself back into an NFL quarterback. But I put, especially around these parts, we'll be paying close attention. Spencer Rattler at number five for the best storylines for this upcoming football season. Number four, I would say Jimbo versus Nick Saban. I think when Alabama and Texas A&M play in October, that's probably going to be the most intriguing game of the year. We'll have our standard rivals, of course, rivalries, towards the end of the season. But Texas A&M, Alabama will be a lot of fun. I think Alabama may win easily, but just the potential fireworks. I'll also make this prediction here in June that I actually don't think we'll get a whole lot out of that game. I think they'll both take the high road. But you know you're going to be interested, and you're going to want to tune in to see Jimbo and Saban and what's going to happen when they're on the field together. Not only that, but just the idea of competing within the SEC. Texas A&M won last year. They had the number one recruiting class. We know all the storylines. Can they finally get to the playoff for the first time this year? Can they knock off Alabama? Or can they go to the playoff with an Alabama somehow? We'll see what Texas A&M accomplishes this year. Number three of the biggest or best storylines for college football this upcoming fall, I'm going to put Clemson at number three. This, to me, is a big swing year. Right, you have one down year last year and a down year for them. I know they still won, 10 games? But they did not compete in the ACC title game, and they played in the Cheez-It Bowl. That was not meeting preseason expectations for Clemson. That was, or should have been, a letdown if you're a Clemson fan. If they have a similar season this year, same idea. I'll look at it as a letdown again. And you have back-to-back seasons like that, a little bit of a concern, right? If they're not in the ACC title game again this year, I start to worry a little bit. I can understand one down year, right? Maybe it's an outlier. Maybe DJ just wasn't ready. I'll give you a chance to bounce back. Two down years back-to-back. All right, now we're building a little bit of a trend. I saw some people make their picks for the ACC title game, and only one out of four football analysts chose Clemson to even be in the ACC championship. So a lot of people are down on Clemson. You lost, your two important coordinators. DJ did not look good last year. The ACC is becoming a little more interesting away from Clemson with the likes of NC State and Miami, and we'll see what Pittsburgh and Wake Forest does as a follow-up this year. But Clemson's number three because we assume Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, they'll be fine. What are we going to get out of Clemson this year? Will they get back to the playoff? Will they be in that conversation? Or are they going to be third place, third best team, not compete for the ACC title game? We'll see. Number two of the best storylines for this college football season is Bryce Young against C.J. Stroud. Now, I do hesitate because every year we think we know the best quarterbacks in college football, and it turns out it doesn't really work out that way. But going into this year, on paper, it looks like we have quite the showdown between Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud for both the Heisman, for number one quarterback in the draft, for the national championship. These are the two best quarterbacks heading into the season in the country. It should be a lot of fun to watch these two teams on these two big-time programs with the high expectations compete Saturday after Saturday after Saturday, putting up big numbers, and maybe we'll even get these two battling in the national championship or the playoff. Watching to see who's better, Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud this year, could be a lot of fun this fall. This is probably too high of praise, but I think back, we were talking about Texas earlier, big-time recruits, I think back to Vince Young and Matt Leinart that year, and then they met in the Rose Bowl, and that's one of the most incredible football games I've ever seen. And Vince Young was phenomenal, and because of that game, he got drafted as high as he did. I would love something like that, where all year you're looking at these two teams, Matt Leinart, USC, Vince Young, Texas, they were the two best teams in football, and they finally met on the biggest stage with the two best quarterbacks, and it lived up to the hype. I would love to see, like, a dueling piano bar. You're watching Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud just light up their conferences every Saturday. They're the two best quarterbacks in the country. They'll be the top two quarterbacks drafted, and then we get them in the national championship. That'd be a lot of fun. That's my wish this year as a neutral college football fan. And then number one, though, the biggest story, I think, to track in college football this year, I kind of cheated here and put a bunch within one, but it's programs trying to get back. With the Arch Manning recruiting, right, we're hearing, oh, is this it? Is Texas back? Well, in the meantime, they do have Quinn Ewers and year two of Steve Sarkisian. You have USC with Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams and the number one wide receiver. Are they going to be back? Are they going to win their conference? What about Mario Cristobal in Miami? Are they going to win the Coastal in the ACC? And if you even want to throw in LSU, they had a bad year. Here comes Brian Kelly. Can they compete right away first year of Brian Kelly in the SEC? I think that's the biggest story. What are we actually going to get? Look, USC is the favorite to win the Pac-12. Are they going to do it? Texas had the second best odds to win the Big 12. Are they actually going to compete this year? Miami has, I think it's the third best odds to win the ACC. So there's high hopes for these teams. These are big brands, big fan bases, teams with history that have not been that great of late, but they brought in either a big coach or a big quarterback this offseason. The hype surrounding them is real, right? People are excited about USC, Texas, Miami. We're talking about, you know, maybe New Year's Six teams. Maybe USC's a playoff team. What are we actually going to get out of them? Are these the coaches and or quarterbacks that could lead them back to that promised land? That's the number one story for me. Five biggest, best storylines of the college football season, the five things I'm looking forward to, Spencer Rattler, five, Jimbo and Nick Saban all season long, but especially that game in October. Number four, Clemson, number three, what are we going to get? Number two, Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud battling all year for quarterback supremacy. And number one, those one-time top-end programs that are trying to get back there and that have legitimate excitement and hype around them for the first time in a while. USC, Texas, Miami, and if you want, right, you can even include LSU if you wish with Brian Kelly. And then an honorable mention. I'll even give you an honorable mention because I was debating if this should crack the top five and bump somebody else out. I'm going to say Harbaugh and Michigan. What's the follow-up going to be this year for Harbaugh and Michigan? Harbaugh is somebody that football fans love to hate. You love to have a reason to root against Harbaugh. I actually like Harbaugh. I've defended Harbaugh. I wanted my Vikings to hire Harbaugh this offseason. But I also have been comparing Michigan all offseason to last year's Florida. They had their best year under Harbaugh. They beat Ohio State finally. They win the Big Ten. They go to the playoff. That's great. But it's harder to stay on top, right? They got to the top, at least their top. I don't know if Michigan could ever actually win a national championship. I don't think they could compete with Georgia or Alabama. We saw that in that playoff game. I mean, that was best case. If we were being realistic, that was best case scenario for Michigan last year. There wasn't much more you could accomplish. That was the best you could do. All right, well, that's great. Harbaugh got a lot of people off his back, right? He got some money back. All right, well, now what are you going to do this year? Was it a one and done? Was it a little flukish? Because, you know, if Michigan struggles again this year and beyond, Michigan fans, Harbaugh detractors, they'll write off last year. It was a one-off. It was an outlier. It was a fluke. So how's Michigan going to follow it up? I think they take a step back. I compare them to Florida from a year ago. I don't think they'll be as bad as Florida, but I see a lot of similar trends. You lost your best players to the draft. In this case, Michigan, they lost both coordinators. Harbaugh thought he was going to the NFL as well. Looked like he didn't want to be there anymore. You reach the pinnacle. It's hard to then come back and try to top that. So Michigan would be an honorable mention. Don't quite crack my top five, but I'd put them at number six. How's Michigan going to be this year? Top things to look for in college football this season. Coming up, we'll introduce a new segment of the show that we'll do at the end of each week. And we'll do it next as we get ready to wrap up your Friday heading towards the weekend. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll introduce a new topic in just a moment here, or a new segment on the Morrow Midday Show in just a moment here on your Friday. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. earlier I gave you my power rankings in Major League Baseball. And I have to give credit where credit is due. You know, I was a little tough on the Braves. I heard from Braves fans when they won 14 in a row, and I wrote a lot of it off to the fact that they were playing bad teams. So I have to give props. They're not out of the woods yet. You get the Dodgers this weekend. Let's see how it goes. But they did take 3 out of 4 against the Giants, and they found ways to win a couple of those games. And the Braves, I gave you the power rankings earlier. I left them just outside of the top five, but they're playing as good of baseball as anybody in the month of June. They're tied with the Yankees for the best record this month. So they're playing really good baseball. This was a good series this week against the Giants. They win the series. And now they are 500 this year against teams with a winning record. So, you know, solid. And also in one-run games, they're now 11-8 after getting, what, 3 one-run wins against the Giants this week. So a good start for the Braves to this stretch. Now you get the Dodgers this weekend, and then you get the Phillies after that, which even that could be an interesting test. Those divisional games are always important. And the Braves this year have not been great. They've been okay against their own division, 13-10. So this is an interesting stretch, but a good start to the week for the Braves. We'll see how things go with the Dodgers in time. That should be Dodgers in town. That should be fun. And if Freeman is booed tonight, we'll see how he's received. He'll get his World Series ring. Meanwhile, the Giants will have to now bounce back after unfortunately losing 3 out of 4 against the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, we got the Reds this weekend in a series, but once again, bug on the windshield type game for the Giants. These boys are ready to go. We'll be locked in. No, don't worry about a thing, Luke, with the San Francisco Giants. They'll be just fine. If Jock Peterson's hitting the ball, Estrada's hitting the ball the way we need to, and our pitching staff doesn't let us down, which I already have gripes against multiple pitchers on our pitching staff now. So once that all ends, I think the Giants will be okay.
They should be fine. Yeah, this is, you know, if you're coming off a couple of tough games, the Reds are one of those teams you want to see. So they should be able to bounce back this weekend. If you missed it earlier this week, Trent has become now the biggest Giants fan you'll ever meet. He's jumped on the Giants bandwagon this year, and I'm all for it. Certainly better than the Yankees. I gave you my rankings earlier. The Yankees are clearly the best team in baseball. And then from there, I think there's a big gap, but I think the Mets would be the second best. The Dodgers, I have concerns about that bullpen, and they're a little beat up right now. Dodgers 3, Astros 4, Padres 5, and then the Braves probably right outside of that group. See how they do against the Dodgers, see what sort of reaction Freddie Freeman gets tonight as he gets his ring, and it should be a fun series. If you're a baseball guy, this is a good weekend of baseball. We got some good series this weekend. You just wouldn't know it because Major League Baseball, they're like a silent film. They don't say a word about anything going on in their sport. So we're going to do this at the end of Fridays each week. It's not all that unique. It's something all sorts of radio shows do. They'll call it the bum of the week. I know another radio show does champ and a chump. And the idea is, well, it's pretty self-explanatory. Bum of the week. You look back at the end of the week and see who's the biggest bum of the week. Who is the guy that had the biggest blunder this week? Did the worst thing, made themselves look the worst, maybe had the worst performance, whatever way you want to take it. We're going to do it each and every Friday, look back on the week that was, and wrap it up with essentially the bum of the week, but we can't steal the name of another show's segment. So instead, we just take the segment, we change the name, it's our own thing, it's unique, it's like nobody's ever heard of it before. It's time to do an album.
You are a disgrace to this university, to this country, and humanity in general.
You blew it!
Shut up in your face.
You are one pathetic loser.
God, Karen, you are so stupid.
Don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again.
Shut up or you fail!
Time now for this week's Persona Non Grata.
That's right. We don't do Bum of the Week around here. We do Persona Non Grata. And after Paolo Banchero goes first overall in the draft, we play a little music from The Godfather as well to celebrate on this Friday. Persona Non Grata. Who is that this week in the sports world? There's plenty of guys you could choose from. We started the week on Monday talking about Kenny Atkinson, removing his name as head coach of the Hornets and pulling a 180 on Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time, over the weekend. You could say Kyrie Irving for what he's doing with Brooklyn. I would also suggest Kyrie Irving just because one of the things I hate about my own industry is how consumed and wrapped up we get with these storylines and these stars, and all you're going to hear about over the next week is Kyrie Irving. And as somebody who even works in the industry, I'm tired of it. I don't care to hear about it. Let me know when there's a resolution. Maybe you feel the same way about the whole Deshaun Watson saga. I'd also put Deshaun on this list. He could be on this list every week until we get things figured out. We talked a lot this week about the LIV golfers, or just the LIV golf series. If you're a golf fan, maybe you feel like those guys. Maybe you feel like they turned their back on their family. Like a Brooks Koepka, specifically, who fed a bunch of nonsense 2 years ago and then did the opposite, or even last week was a little short with a reporter, and then a few days later left for the LIV Golf Tour. We talked about that earlier this week. And then when it comes to the NBA draft last night, you could also choose maybe the Kings, especially if you're a Kings fan, for their choice. Or if you're a Knicks fan, I think you have a lot of reasons to be upset with the Knicks. I thought they had a lousy night last night. I thought they they're kind of embarrassing themselves right now. All great options to choose for this week. But I go with Kenny Atkinson as persona non grata of the week. Originally was going to be head coach of the Hornets and then changed his mind over the weekend. And here we are where we just had a draft last night. The Hornets drafted a player. They still don't have a head coach yet. Not great. And I don't like this idea of changing your mind. I hated when Josh McDaniels did it. Now, that was further down the road with the Colts. He was already hiring a staff. But I would ask Kenny Atkinson, what changed? You were already with the Warriors. You agreed to be the head coach of the Hornets. Was it simply just winning that championship? Like, what else changed? You knew what you could accomplish in Golden State. You were already assistant. You knew. It wasn't like, I don't think the money changed over the sake of the over the time of the conversation. I don't like changing your mind or opinion like that and leaving the Hornets at the altar. And you don't do that to the greatest guy, the greatest athlete, greatest basketball player of all time, Michael Jordan. But maybe now it'll tick him off enough that he'll actually start doing a good job running that organization. I did like their pick last night. So it's perfect for the idea of the segment because just like Al Pacino says in the lead-up of that, we call it imaging in the industry, that production piece, right? Don't ever turn your back against the family. Kenny Atkinson, he kind of turned his back against the Hornets and what was supposed to be his new family, and specifically Michael Jordan. You don't do that to MJ. So Kenny Atkinson is this week's persona non grata. We'll do it every Friday. Look back at the biggest bums of the week, and I'll let you know who's the most disappointing. It's like Festivus when Jerry Stiller and Frank Costanza. When Frank Costanza gets in front of the table at Festivus, and he says, you gather all the people you love and you tell them how they disappointed you over the past year. That's what we'll do on Fridays. Talk about all the people in the sports world that have disappointed us over the past week. This week, Kenny Atkinson. For originally deciding to become the head coach of the Hornets, and then a few days, weeks, however long it was later, in the 11th and a half hour, saying, yeah, actually, I'm going to stay in Golden State. By the way, what are we doing here, Hornets? You just had the draft. Can we hire somebody? I figure you just go to the next. All right, let's give D'Antoni a call, see if he wants a job. What's going on here? How are we still dragging this on? You got to get a head coach in there. We're about to start the season already. We'll wrap up your Friday when we come back. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You're doing a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Just want to say, I find you the low country Colin Cowherd. You use common sense with statistics, and you combine them, and you think outside the box.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends! Tell your friends!
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Go ahead, boy. That's how you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Well, it's with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Within itself, with a language we all understand. Opportunity for all to sing, dance, and clap their hands. Well, just because the record has a groove, don't make it in the groove. But you can tell right away.
Wrapping up your Friday in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And through the free app, you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. The show is available. The podcasts are available through the app as well. ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 9 different states and multiple countries today, including Washington, as we described last hour as just being out there, wherever they are listening in Washington.
Far away.
Yeah. So appreciate you still sticking with the show.
Beautiful state. Yeah. Beautiful state.
We love you in Washington, let me tell you. And we're big time. They love us in Washington as well. So the feeling's mutual. Catch the show on demand if you missed anything. And instead of being bogged down with Kyrie Irving for 3 hours, we got to all sorts of different stuff throughout the afternoon. Braves-Dodgers coming up tonight. Should be a fun series this weekend. We just saw Jock Peterson get his World Series ring. Now we'll get to see Freddie tonight. I am curious to see the reaction. I do think he gets some boos, and I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't squeeze my rosary beads and yell at you Braves fans. I think it could be a fair response. So we'll see what happens tonight when Freeman returns and what happens this weekend with the Braves-Dodgers. If you're into baseball, this is a good weekend of baseball. I mean, there's not a whole lot going on. Watch Severance on Apple TV if you want. And watch a little baseball because there's some fun series here in June going on the next couple of days. I'll be their PR team instead. I'll give you a sales pitch on baseball since they won't. Catch the show on demand if you miss anything. And stay tuned for Fan Talk with Trent coming up here in a few moments. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again on Monday at noon. Enjoy the weekend. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.